Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we head to Bozeman, Montana, seeking good food for under $15. We meet up with a Bozeman local, Executive Chef Bill Baskin, the director of the Culinary Arts Program at Gallatin College. Chef Baskin takes us to his two favorite eating places, Roos Fried Chicken and Whistlepig Korean. After cooking in kitchens as the Fat Duck in London and a Lindy in Chicago, he headed the kitchens locally at Lone Mountain Ranch in Big Sky and then Open Range in Bozeman. Baskin knows good food. So why Roos Fried Chicken and Whistlepig Korean?
Well, they're places that I actually like to eat with or without my family on my own. I find myself going back to these two places again and again, and probably more often than the fine dining options that we now have.
This is by far not fine dining at all. So why the Roost?
Oh, well, I'm from Texas. I'll just start by saying that. Fried chicken is near and dear to my heart. I've not seen a lot of places do a great job with it, to be honest. Technically, it's pretty tough to execute. Willie Mae's Scotch House is my favorite in the country out of New Orleans. For our neck of the woods, I think Roos is extremely tough to beat. They do one thing and they do it really well, which is a great business model for a restaurant.
Well, Marilyn, the Roos Fried Chicken is located on West Main Street in a small enclave across from a shopping center. A red neon sign with a chicken atop with the words Tasty, Roos, Good hangs over the red panel glass door. The feeling is as though we are entering someone's house. Once inside, a huge menu in large print in black and white fronts the side wall by the counter. The graphics on the menu are playful and quirky, with the images of a chicken on a stick held by a gloved hand of a cartoon character, and orbiting lines around another chicken image alluding to spun chicken or chicken cooked on a rotisserie. Just enough chicken kish is scattered throughout, but perhaps the most telling art on the wall says, Southern by birth, in Bozeman for trout fishing. We now talk to Michael Buck, one of the owners, who by the way likes to be called Buck, of how Roos Fried Chicken came to be.
You know, my business partner, Joe Darr, came up with the idea, and he said he wanted to open a fried chicken restaurant. And we talked about it for a little while and started planning, and then this place became available. It's kind of what spurred the, you know, really got us kicked off. And yeah, and then we created Roos Fried Chicken.
Well, you're not from Bozeman. Where are you from?
No, I'm not. I'm from Oklahoma, and Joe is from Chattanooga, Tennessee. So neither of us are from here. We've both been here a little over 10 years, and we literally moved here to fly fish. We moved here because the fly fishing was amazing. Love the Rockies and love everything about it, and Bozeman as well. My first vacation out here was in 2000, and I came out just on a fly fishing vacation. And then it was pretty easy to fall in love with it.
And so what was some of the inspirations that helped you create the menu for this restaurant?
You know, we're pretty simple, standard Southern fried chicken. You can find similar restaurants to this all over the South. Our ingredients are everything is from scratch. We make them in-house. We use fresh products. And, I've always felt the most important ingredients are the ones you leave out. So they're simple and good. And we just kind of let the food talk for itself.
So is there a secret ingredient in your fried chicken that makes yours special than any others?
It's the love. There's definitely easier ways to make fried chicken. It's just not as good, but really is just the love of making fried chicken that makes it better. And anybody who's has any kind of culinary background has been in it will agree that it's you kind of love what you can do, because we could shortcut it, we can make it easier, we can make it cheaper, but we decided to make it better instead.
Tell the listeners about some of the side dishes that you serve with your fried chicken.
You know, most popular are the mashed potatoes and gravy. And the mac and cheese, which is both traditional, simple, a white gravy on a pepper, mashed potatoes, and mac and cheese is just a simple, good old Southern mac and cheese. Then we have cheesy grits and collard greens, and once again, they're pretty simple recipes. They're fresh from scratch. The one thing kind of neat about the grits is we ship them in, from Falls Mills, Tennessee. It actually costs more to ship the grits here than the grits cost. But you can't get good Southern grits in the North.
Buck steps away to order up food for us. As we wait, Chef Baskin and I talk about cooking chicken.
Well, chicken is also an item that is difficult to cook correctly. You can overcook it, and undercooking it, of course, is the major faux pas in the food business.
Absolutely. There's just so many variables, so many opportunities for it to go terribly wrong within the process, from sourcing all the way to holding it, before it goes out on a plate for your guests to enjoy. There's a lot of details that have to be really well executed each step of the way.
We are served three items off the menu. They arrive at the table in red plastic baskets lined with red and white checkered paper.
So this is the fried chicken sandwich, a standard, it's a boneless, skinless chicken breast, crispy fried, it's got lettuce, comeback sauce, pickles on it. Chicken and waffles, kind of a local favorite. We didn't put those on originally because it's not a traditional southern dish. It actually originated out of Pennsylvania, but the fried chicken and waffles is a southern rendition of that. But we had so many requests for it, we had to do it, I can't believe you how many chicken and waffles we sell. But we make our waffles in-house, we make our own butter. Obviously everything else is made from scratch and fried to order. So.
Well, and you've dusted it with sugar and added that. So you've definitely given
your own. Honey butter, and then we even make the syrup in-house.
In my book, sauce is the frosting of savory foods. Here at Roost Fried Chicken, there's a comeback sauce that is mayonnaise-based with pickles. But their star sauce may be the Nashville hot sauce. So what's in it?
Cayenne-based seasoning. So it's not over-the-top hot. It's not an habanero that's going to burn you and hurt forever. And there's a little bit of sweetness in there. But it's just hot enough to make you want to take another bite. So.
I like that. It's not going to hurt me forever. All right. So
no,
I should be able to survive this.
No. Yeah, so it's just a cayenne powder is what the heat is. So it's not over the top. We've had some people come in and request for hotter because everybody wants to be tough. But we just want it to be good.
The Nashville chicken sandwich is Chef Baskin's favorite item to order here.
I like the chicken sandwich Nashville hot, but it's good however you order it. Everything about it's borderline perfect. It's got a really nice bun, a soft bun that's been butter toasted, pickles, comeback sauce, a nice crispy breading. I mean, you can't do wrong. All right, so I've just had a big bite of the Nashville hot. My mouth is on fire in a very pleasant way. This Nashville hot chicken goes so well with a little bit of pickle and a little bit of buttered bread. It's just like the perfect combination. A beer would go nice with it as well, I might add.
I mean, I could say yes on the beer. For me, I know that Bill is tougher than I am, is that this is warm, but it's on the edge of almost my mouth on fire. But I still can taste things and I can still sense things. So it's a good hot. So I'm cleaning off my fingers as you bite into the sandwich. And Bill did say that he doesn't eat the sandwich while driving. And I understand why, because I have cut up lettuce with the sauce that has it's mayo and ketchup base with some pickle in there on my lap. That's all over my pants at this point. But super, super delicious. So, Bill, let's move on to the fried chicken and taste that with the waffles. So we're going to have you bite into this chicken here.
So what does perfectly fried chicken sound like?
Lovely as always.
I can hear the crunch from here.
So here are some thoughts as to why the breading is so crispy.
It's a really simple breading, which is one thing I like a lot. I would assume that it's a dry breading, where they go flour, egg wash, flour, instead of a wet, which is also done oftentimes with fried chicken. It's lightly seasoned, but it's got enough of a salt content to have a great flavor. And it's just one of the simple pleasures in cookery. It's just really well executed fried food.
And now for the waffles.
It's great when life is combined with savory with sweet, and this is dessert for lunch is what I see this at. The chicken is super tender, with that crust that, we heard Bill bite into it and it just was crispy. We've had this sit here at the table for a while, but it's just still tender with a crunchy outside. The waffles are like cake. You bite into it, and it still has a savory taste to it. It's not super sweet. The butter adds that great creaminess to it, and there's just enough pecans that it just hints at it. So with a little maple syrup, again, it's breakfast and dessert combined all at once here.
Buck comes back to our table to check in on us. He tells us how the chicken is prepared.
So we take a pretty simple chicken. We don't use a tumbled or injected chicken. It's just an all-natural, and it's fresh, never frozen. Then we put our own seasoning on it. It stays for 24 to 48 hours, and then we dredge it in a pretty simple flour dredge, and we pressure fry it. So as opposed to an open pit fryer, we use a pressure fryer. What that does is allow us to cook at a lower temperature for less time and still get a fully cooked chicken. And it actually, the pressure actually keeps the moisture in and the grease out. So you actually get a healthier piece of chicken.
So Buck has brought up the issue of health. What else is found on the menu of Roost Fried Chicken?
Even though we are a Southern fried chicken restaurant, we have amazing salads, and we have rotisserie chicken, which is just simply seasoned. We cook with no oil and no fats, and it's extremely healthy. So don't think that you have to have fried chicken to come in. And don't think, you know, our menu is surprisingly, the majority of it's gluten-free, which would surprise a lot of people. Unfortunately, the chicken is not. We're working on that, but it's going to require more fryers, which we just don't have space for right now.
General Manager of Roost Fried Chicken, Carrie Martin, knows the daily ins and outs of the restaurant. So what are some of the most ordered items?
Definitely the half-fried basket, the chicken strips, and the chicken and waffles. Chicken sandwich is right up there as well.
What about side dishes?
You know, the mac and cheese is always a favorite and a hit with everybody. The mashed potatoes, you mash them in-house with our own recipe of butter and pepper and garlic, and those are also really popular.
For the trivia lover out there, white meat or dark meat, what sells best at Roost Fried Chicken?
We sell more wings. It's a huge seller. It's, you know, everybody loves the wings, which is a white meat, but we sell more weight-wise. We sell more legs. So we sell, which is a dark meat. So per piece, we sell more white meat, but per weight, we sell more dark.
So what's in store for the future?
You've been here for 5 years now. What's next?
We've absolutely outgrown this building. So a remodel expansion is definitely in line. We're working on that right now. We're hoping to do other locations. We've got some spots we've been looking around. You know, outside of this, we've also opened Victory Taco and Genuine Ice Cream. So downtown. So we have... we sell tacos of that. We actually have Genuine Ice Cream is actually a wholesale company. It's a company by itself, and we sell in the grocery stores as well as here at Roost and at Victory.
Is the milk locally sourced?
We get it from Meadow Gold. We ship it in, so yeah, it does absolutely. We try to get as much local product as possible. Unfortunately, we can't get our chickens local because I don't think anybody can come up with 4,000 pounds of chicken a week for us in Montana.
We move from Southern fried chicken to Korean food. We go about 1 mile east down the road to the heart of downtown Bozeman. Join Chef Baskin and me at Whistle Pig Korean in the second part of this show. Chef Bill Baskin and I are now at Whistle Pig Korean. In an old brick building, once an automobile sales shop, Emma Woods and her husband Ross Franklin has set up their restaurant. The place is cozy, yet open with high ceilings and tall windows. The vibe is casual with urban rusticity. A blackboard spells out the menu offerings. The restaurant holds the other name of the woodchuck or groundhog. In enticing Woods to come to Bozeman, her husband told her this cute animal could be found at the end of one of their first hikes. With the recent Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, their restaurant has become even more popular. So how did Whistle Pig Korean begin? Emma Woods shares.
This restaurant used to be a Middle Eastern restaurant called Chickpea Cafe. I was actually working here as a kitchen manager for about a year. My husband and I, we were fooling around with the idea of opening up a Korean restaurant just because we both have a background in the restaurant industry, and I love making Korean food. I was making it for him every night for dinner, and then we're just like, we should try to work on creating a restaurant in Bozeman. After a little while, the owner of Chickpea Cafe, she had to move to Ohio for family reasons. So she approached me and said, I know that you want to open up a restaurant. Would you like to take over my lease and buy my equipment? So it's just kind of just a lucky coincidence that it happened at that time and took over. And then about a month later, we opened up as Whistle Pig Korean.
And your heritage is Korean?
Yes, yes. I was born in Korea.
And did you come here to Montana directly, or where have you lived?
So I was born in Korea, and then I was adopted from Korea when I was about 3 and a half. I grew up on Cape Cod, and then so I lived on Cape Cod. I went to school there. I went to college at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. And then after that, I worked in California for a year doing wealth management. And then after that, I decided I wanted to go to Korea because I had not been since I had been adopted. So I got a job teaching English and as a faculty manager at an English academy in Korea. So I moved over there for about 2.5 years, and that's where I actually met my husband, Ross, because he was out there teaching English as well. And so we met over there, and he wanted to move to Bozeman and after Korea because we were like, oh, we should move back to the States. All of our family's here. But I didn't know much about Bozeman or Montana in general. So I was like, I don't know. How about we move to Denver? Because I've heard a lot about Denver. And like, he's from Denver. So we moved there for a year, and then we came up to Bozeman for a wedding. And I was like, it's beautiful up here. I could definitely live here. So, and then we moved up here, and then about a year and a half later, we opened up Whistle Pig Korean.
And as far as the food goes, it must be a way for you to reach back into your heritage and learn about, you know, your roots. And you probably had to study some of the recipes for this restaurant. Where did that all come from?
So, growing up on Cape Cod, it's a predominantly white area, and I think also because I was slightly older when I was adopted that I constantly wanted kimchi and rice, and it was just like one of those, like, the flavors had already been introduced to me, and that's what I wanted. That was comfort food to me, was rice and kimchi. So growing up, it was always making Korean food and like trying to recreate those flavors that I knew I've had before. So it's just constant experimentation even when I was little. Growing up, my family put on Korean culture camps for Korean adoptees in the area. So it was a lot of Harvard and Wellesley Korean students would come and be counselors, and we would actually make a lot of the foods that are on my menu actually together. Like, they would teach us Korean food, and like the japchae and the mandu and the kimbap were all things that we would make with the Korean counselors at the Korean culture camps for the day. So it does definitely have like a childhood memory to me of rolling kimbap and like learning how to do all of these things that I had never done before. And then after that, it was always just constantly experimenting. Whenever there was a Korean restaurant, if I was traveling, it's like I always wanted to eat there. And especially my time in Korea, because I got to try a lot more Korean food that I guess a lot of people don't ever get to try. So a lot more regional dishes and things like that, and just trying to recreate all those flavors that I had.
Well, the format of this restaurant is you almost get to pick and choose as to how you want to bring your dish together. So tell the listeners a little bit about what we need to do when they come in here.
So our main dish that we serve here is called a bibimbap, which is literally translates to mixed rice. So we try to make it a little bit easier for people to kind of mix and match the flavors that they want. So basically, it's always going to be a bed of rice with different seasoned vegetables. And then also, of course, we can easily omit some of the vegetables because some people aren't fans of all the vegetables. And then from there, if you want, you get to pick any protein that you wanted to add, like bulgogi beef, chicken, a spicy pork, you can do tofu. So then you can kind of pick and choose if you wanted to add meat, add more proteins, keep it vegetarian. And then, of course, the last step is what bowl do you want to put it in? So in Korea, bibimbap comes in two different bowls. Like the stainless steel bowl is called a yangpun, and it's going to be hot rice, but all the veggies are cold, and you mix it all together and with a gochujang sauce, which is a fermented pepper paste sauce. It's going to be more of a warm rice salad dish, a little bit lighter and definitely like almost fresher in a way where you get to taste each vegetable individually. The sizzling hot bowl is perfect for the wintertime. It's a granite bowl that's seasoned with sesame oil. We build the bibimbap in it, and then we cook it over in an open flame for about 5 minutes. It's going to crisp up, caramelize the rice, keeps everything really nice and hot, even at the table as you eat from it. It's going to have a little bit more of a fried rice flavor and texture to it, and just stays really hot, which is perfect when it's sub-zero weather out here. But both of them are very traditional takes on bibimbap. A lot of people assume that only the stone bowl is the authentic way, but it's like, it's the more popular way, of course, now, but historically bibimbap was served in brass bowls. So it's definitely like the stainless steel is, I guess, historically more traditional, but the stone bowl is now the more popular way of eating bibimbap. So it's just a little different history regarding each one.
And this is the way that they eat in Korea, where you can just come in and it's fairly casual. So you can, again, put together your own dish.
Yeah, there's several. In Korea, restaurants are a little bit different. Normally, it's just a restaurant will serve one item, and that's their specialty. They don't have vast menus like American restaurants where you can get steak, burgers, everything. It's normally, if you want a bibimbap, you're going to a bibimbap shop, and that's all they serve there is bibimbap. So we try to kind of keep that same idea. It's like we want to just do one dish super well. Then we are slowly starting to expand our menu and just try to add in other dishes that were our favorites when we were living over in Korea.
Well, eggs are very popular as when you add to the rice dish. How do they contribute to the whole experience?
So I think that the egg is one of the most important parts to a bibimbap. Especially you want it to have a runny yolk. A lot of times in Korea, they'll even just throw a raw egg in there, even if it's the cold bowl and you mix it all together. The egg just adds this nice creaminess, especially the egg yolk. It's a really nice creaminess to the texture of it. And then especially if you get in the hot bowl, kind of fries up and makes everything just super delicious and mixes with that sauce. It almost makes like a creamy, spicy sauce in a way.
For our tasting pleasure, Chef Woods brings us the following entrees. Chap chai, made with sweet potato noodles with spicy pork. The house signature dish, bibimbap, in a hot stone bowl with white rice with bulgogi or marinated beef. And then Emma's own creation, vegan fried cauliflower in a sweet and spicy sauce over an Asian slaw. Here are Chef Baskin's remarks on the vegan fried cauliflower.
Unlike any cauliflower I've ever had, I think this dish is awesome.
It reminds me of a really beautifully cooked French fry where it's crispy on the exterior but kind of hollow or, you know, softly cooked in the middle.
And then it's almost just creamy on the outside. Mm-hmm. And then that sweet and hot on the outside.
Whoa, that's really good.
Yeah, that wing sauce has definitely been my pride and joy recently that I created.
That's awesome. It should be.
Yeah, and that hot is just right there. I'm going to say, you know, because, again, I can handle only so much hot.
The cauliflower unites savory, sweet, and spicy in a playful way, combining the essence of American buffalo chicken wings with Chinese sweet and sour pork. All taste buds come happily into play. The bibimbap brought back memories of my Chinese childhood with the rice cooked in a heated stone bowl. The brown crust on the bottom reminded me of the friendly battles I had with my siblings over the crunchy layer of a pot of cooked rice. We slathered the crispy treat with soy sauce. Then in the bibimbap, the thinly sliced beef bulgogi exuded flavors of garlic, soy, and ginger with touches of sweetness. Of course, the crowning ingredient was the fried over easy egg that when broken cascaded richness into the dish. Finally, Chef Baskin chimes in on japchae, the sweet potato starch noodles.
These noodles are unlike any I've had before. They have a beautiful bounce or a spring to them.
Really interesting firm texture as well. But they definitely take flavor really well, and they have a beautiful translucent appearance to them. They're excellent.
So the japchae noodles, you can normally, we'll serve them just plain, which is completely vegan. And then, of course, you can add meat to it. So in this one, I added our dwaeju gogi, which is spicy pork.
Sides are served on small plates that act as condiments, seasoning, balancing, highlighting the main entree. In Korean dining, there is usually a handful of little plates that come to the table. They include kimchi or pickled cabbage, pickled cucumber, shredded green onions, and my favorite, goguma matan, or candy sweet potatoes.
That's one of those silly little side dishes that I always remembered getting in Korean restaurants that were, they always taste like dessert, but they serve them with dinner, and you're just like,
yeah, I can see you, like that, a little packet of that. You know, you go in and you just order it, and you just eat it like candy. It's delicious.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of complement to the spice of the kimchi. You just get that kind of sweet honey and soy to it.
Korean food is often misunderstood and overlooked by diners. Chef Woods has this to say.
I think one of the main things is people come in expecting extremely spicy food. Like, they're like, oh, I love spicy food. I want the spiciest thing that you can ever make. And it's just like, yeah, Korean food is known for chili peppers, but the Korean chili pepper flakes aren't even, it's kind of around the same heat level as a jalapeno. They use it a lot, and it adds like this beautiful, bright, vibrant red color, but nothing is ever going to be quite as spicy as like Thai or Indian food. Those ones are going to be ridiculously spicy compared to Korean food. But Korean food definitely has a well balance of the spice and the heat. Definitely having all soups in Korea are like served boiling hot at your table. So it's just like that combination of just temperature with the chili peppers tends to make things a little bit spicier. I would say inherently Korean food isn't the spiciest of all foods. It definitely has a nice kick to it. But yeah, it's one of those things that I like to explain to people where it's like, it's going to kind of wake up your taste buds, but it's not going to overpower anything for you.
Many thanks to Bill Baskin for taking me to his favorite haunts to find food for under $15 in Bozeman. I appreciate his insights and thoughts on what we tasted at Roost Fried Chicken and Whistle Pig Korean. I look forward to coming back and doing further research with Chef Baskin. Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region, has been produced with the help and expertise of Ken Seabird. Theme music is by Parker Brown. I thank you, listeners, for helping make Flavors possible. For more information about this show, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.